This is the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Rob Schaefer, joined by my NBC Sports Chicago teammate, Casey Johnson. Coming up on the show, Casey and I react to Arturis Karnišovas' interview on 670 The Score Thursday morning, parse through his comments about the Bulls' potential appetite for a trade and a potential return for Patrick Williams this season. Later in the show, Casey and I reflect on the season that Zach LaVine has had so far, despite playing through injury at the beginning, and react to the first round of All-Star fan voting returns, which have DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, and Nikola Vucevic prominently featured for the Bulls.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is DeMar DeRozan, and you're listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast.
All right, welcome in to the Bulls Talk Podcast, live on YouTube today. KC, joined by my NBC Sports Chicago teammate, KC Johnson. KC, first of all, haven't seen you in almost a week. I've been in the protocols. I'm recently exited and re-entering entering the real world, so I'm excited to get back to the UC for Bulls Wizards tomorrow. But how you doing, man? I mean, busy week, practices, no games, but news-wise, how's everything going over in Johnson Land?
Busy but good. Yeah, lots been going on with the beat. We've got a little COVID action going on in our household too, so I feel like I'm kind of surrounded by it. Just trying to stay healthy and get the job done. That's kind of my MO.
Yeah, that's all we can do at this point. And like I said, no games this week for the Bulls, but busy news bulletin wise. We had Executive Vice President Arturis Karnišovas go on radio and make his first public comments since Media Day. So we'll get to all that. First, let's start with a quick news bulletin. I'll just lay it out, Casey, and if you have anything to add, jump in right after me. On Wednesday, the Bulls placed Alex Caruso into the NBA's health and safety protocols. Caruso is the, I believe, 15th player currently on the Bulls roster to enter protocols this season. That number grows to 18 if you include Ersan Ilyasova and Stanley Johnson, who are on 10 days that have since expired, and Alize Johnson, who has been waived. So I know a lot of people saw that news that Caruso was in protocols, and the reaction was kind of, well, of course it was going to happen. Arturis on radio this morning even joked that the Bulls are running out of bodies to be infected at this point, as kind of a dry humor, silver lining type of thing. But Caruso's in. The unfortunate thing with that is that he has missed the Bulls' last six games with a foot sprain. Billy told us yesterday that Caruso was actually cleared to practice on Wednesday, and he had said on Monday, Billy, that Caruso's only hurdle left to be cleared to return to play was to face some live contact. Obviously, getting back to practice was going to be big for him to do that, but he gets sidelined with the protocols. They recently shortened the mandatory quarantine period to 6 days instead of 10. So, you know, look out for next Tuesday, the 11th of January. That'll be kind of the end of Caruso's 6 day window. We'll see if he can get the requisite testing and cycling numbers to get back around then. Casey, did I miss anything, or is it, you know, Caruso inevitably, it seemed like it was going to happen. He's sidelined, and now look out that day, the 11th and 12th, the Bulls have a home back to back against the Pistons and Nets. Sometimes it gets tough to bring guys back during a back-to-back, but I think that's about when we should expect to be looking for Alex Caruso to come back.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, on the one hand, I guess it gives us more time for that foot to heal. On the other hand, I mean, it is a setback in the sense that, you know, Billy made it clear that they were expecting him to ramp up with this rare 3 day window between games. And I assume that the window of availability would have opened on Friday for the Wizards game, but that went by the wayside. But you know, you got to believe that the foot will be a non-issue once he gets through the protocol stint. And as we've also seen that, you know, these can be shorter now with revised guidelines, and, you know, also some guys testing negative within 24 hours quicker because the variant has produced some asymptomatic cases. So we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, definitely going to be out for the Wizards game. And then see, I would be surprised if he travels to Dallas. So he missed that game. Yeah. And then, yeah, you're pointing to the right window, I think, for his return.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to bring up, is that the two games kind of sandwiched in this window are Wizards on Friday at Dallas on Sunday. Obviously, the Bulls, you know, miss Caruso defensively, especially. They are on an 8-game winning streak here. But as Billy and Arturas in his radio interview, which we'll get to in a second, as they've both alluded to in recent days, it's really been the Bulls offense that's carried them in this 8-game winning streak since it started. They're first in the NBA in offense, but 18th in defense. So getting stops when they need to, getting timely hustle plays when they need to continue pulling out victories. But, you know, most of that winning streak has happened without Lonzo Ball or Caruso in the lineup. Lonzo's back. They'll be eager to get Caruso back. And as we've talked about a bunch, it's a reminder that as good as this team has looked, it's still, you know, in 2022, doesn't feel like we've seen them at full strength. But at 25-10, the Bulls will take where they're sitting. That brings us to, as I mentioned earlier, Arturas Karnišovas, first public comments since Media Day, went on the Mully and Haw show on 670 The Score. Is a great interview. I recommend anybody go over to 670's website, the Odyssey app. Go check that out in full for Arturas' full comments. Two bulletin points I wanted to hit on with you, Casey, from that interview. One, as it relates to Arturas' general assessment of the team and kind of what needs to be done over the course of the rest of the season to get the Bulls where they want to go. He was asked point blank kind of if he viewed the Bulls situation as something where he would need to go out on the trade market and add more, or if he was kind of content with where the team was at this point. And I'll read you the full quote from Arturas that is in a story that you wrote, Casey, for our website. I like the group. I like this group a lot, he said. Like I said, we're competing right now this season. It's a new group. Teams that are close by in the standings, like the Brooklyns, Milwaukee's, Phillies, they've had their groups together for 2 or 3 years. We've had this group for 3 months, so we're still learning and still adjusting. I like this group a lot, the mental toughness, a lot of games that we came back, we didn't fold. But at the same time, we are also open to any kind of possibilities and will listen. However, as I said, I love this group of guys. So that's a professional fence straddle to me. But Casey, what do you make of those comments from AK?
Well, I mean, you just nailed it. I mean, like any GM, he's not going to tip his hand on a radio interview, especially one, you know, which is his first public comment since September. So, look, I'll just say this. If Arturas and the management team that includes Mark Eversley and J.J. Polk and Pat Conley has proven anything, it's when they see an opportunity that they think will better the team, they're gonna seize it. So that's the only operating principle I'm working under as we move towards now in the February 10th trade deadline. Is, you know, I recognize team chemistry is important to him. He's brought it up multiple times, including when he was hired. And this team has a lot of great chemistry. But if you know, he's not a really sentimental. It doesn't really strike mm-hmm. me as a really sentimental guy when it comes to transactional decisions. So if, you know, he sees an opportunity to upgrade the team and it costs him his first draft pick and Patrick Williams, I don't think that's going to stop him. So, yeah. So we'll see how it plays out, but I'm just, you know, I think that he'll be aggressive. And then, as I've said before, another media appearances, I think he's earned the benefit of the doubt to, you know, whatever side of the equation he ends up on is probably going to be, you know, pretty well thought out, and you got to trust it's what he thinks is the right one.
And to your point, Casey, about how boldly and aggressively they've acted so far, they were doing that before the Bulls were the first seed in the East, 15 games over 500 on an 8-game winning streak, looking like a true contender. They were acting this way when, you know, they were a couple game shouting distance within 500 last year, but had clearly a, you know, all-star, you know, star level offensive player in Zach LaVine that they wanted to build around quickly. They did it in the offseason, even after their first big, bold, aggressive move, the Nikola Vucevic trade, kind of backfired down the stretch of last season, missing the play-in. So now, I mean, obviously the asset base is a little bit more limited than it was back when they were making the initial moves, you know, obviously at the trade deadline last year and then in the offseason. But I agree. I mean, acting aggressively at any opportunity that presents itself is what I've come to expect as the norm from this regime. So, you know, let's riff off this a little bit, because there is a lot of talk out there about the trade market and what position the Bulls need to address to truly raise their ceiling from the story of the season halfway through the NBA season so far, first in the conference in the regular season to, okay, this team is legitimately a, you know, conference finals lock, potential finals candidate, like ceiling is legitimately winning the finals. Like they might still be a move away from that. The first place my mind goes is to that four spot where obviously Patrick Williams's injury has vacated that spot for the time being. Javonte Green has stepped in, filled in admirably with Javonte Green injured. Derek Jones has come in, played some four. DeMar DeRozan obviously plays a lot of four. Alex Caruso, when he's back, we'll see if he slides into the starting lineup or if Derek Jones Jr. stays there. Either way, Caruso is going to be playing starter level minutes. The Bulls have hodgepodged it together to this point and have made it work. But to me, come playoff time, in terms of long-term sustainability here, that's the place that I would look for, a potential big ticket move that could put them over the top. Two names that come to mind. One guy who has a lot of legitimate sourced buzz from a number of different outlets that his name is out there. He's available. Is Jeremy Grant with Detroit. My mind goes to Harrison Barnes in Sacramento. Those are two guys that just from being two-way big wings can play the four, very versatile. They're different players, and we can maybe get into a comparison if you want, but we're going to write about this at some point. But they're, they come to my mind as two guys that fit the profile and, you know, have the talent level, as guys who have been, fringe all-stars in their careers and are still in their primes. They fit the talent level and the positional and skill profile, as potential options for the Bulls. My question to you, Casey, is knowing what we know about the Bulls asset base, we've talked about that in recent episodes. What do you think it would take for the Bulls to get into the game for guys like that? And do you think it's feasible that the Bulls could thrust themselves into that conversation as we get closer to the deadline?
It's 100% feasible. It's just, you know, how much they're willing to pay. And as the game of poker advances between now and the deadline, you know, how much they, you know, how boldly they want to be and at what price. I mean, they may decide that they don't want to, you know, pay the price, but it's certainly feasible. I mean, both those guys, by all accounts, are going to be available, if not already available. But no one really kind of shows their true hand or their best mm-hmm. offer in early January. Not ever, but, you know, historically. I think a better way to tackle that equation or that question, Rob, is to maybe run down the Bulls' assets. The way I see it, their assets are Patrick Williams definitely being their biggest. Kobe White would be included in that. The Portland protected pick, which certainly looks like it may not be conveying this year with Portland's travails and Damian Lillard injury woes. And then expiring deals, Derek Jones Jr. Being one. There's another in there. Is it Troy Brown Jr.?
Troy Brown Jr. Yeah, he's in that high five to come approaching. I don't have it in front of me, but in the mid to high $5 million range. Yeah.
Right. So if you lay it out there, it's going to take a pretty, you know, strong combination of some multiple combination of pieces of those assets that I just listed to pry. Certainly Grant. I don't have as good of a handle on what I think the market might be for Barnes. I would have to look at it a little bit more. But you know, in Grant's situation, the Pistons are clearly rebuilding. They would want young talent. So I would think that they would be asking for guys like Williams and White and the first round pick, cause those are mm-hmm. young pieces. I think they're probably less interested in expiring deals and more just about acquiring young talent, given where they are in their rebuild situation. So that's, the question you got to ask yourself. I mean, I think, situation where you get a Grant for, like, let's just throw out Williams at a first round pick is probably unrealistic. I think you're going to need to up the ante a little bit. Mm-hmm. He is an all-star, you know, has ties to both Arturis Karnišovas and Billy Donovan. So yeah, he fits on a lot of levels, but you know, we'll see as the game of poker will intensify between now and that deadline.
Well, Grant being a fringe all-star, right? I don't think he didn't make the team last year, but he was certainly one of the first couple off, but he's of that quality of player, certainly. Definitely, you know, glad you mentioned the AK ties. Billy Donovan ties too. He played for Billy in Oklahoma City for a few seasons. The Grant thing is just, it's really, really intriguing to me because he's obviously blossomed into a relatively high quality shot creator in Detroit. Like, he's really spread his wings in the way that it seemed like he wanted to when he left Denver. But he also has that track record of in Denver and Oklahoma City, proving that he can excel in that kind of third or fourth on the totem pole offensively role, be just a defensive menace. To me, when you compare him and Barnes, I see Grant as, with his athleticism and his ability to protect the rim, as probably a little bit better and more versatile defensive option. The question is, you know, going to Detroit for, you know, kind of the increased opportunity and the increased role that he's had there, the featured role that he's had there. Obviously, you know, being traded, it's not a free agent signing. It's not the same calculus there, but you know, how smooth of a fit is that for him to, you know, slide back into that kind of very, very, very high level. I don't even want to say role player, but just like a little bit lower on the totem pole than he is in Detroit. I'm curious how that would work. I think if the Bulls made a deal like that, they would have to be pretty confident that it was going to work smoothly because of how important chemistry and locker room dynamics have been to this team. And the thing that I like about Grant too is, you know, as much as it is trading up in age from where the Bulls would be at with Patrick Williams, Coby White, et cetera, he still is only 27 and is on a pretty reasonable contract for what the type of player that he is, how much at a premium his position and his skill set is around the league. So he's a guy I really, really, really have my eye on. It's interesting to you said that even Patrick Williams, who it also should be mentioned, the Pistons were reportedly enamored with at the 2020 draft. Obviously, they picked seventh. The Bulls picked fourth. I don't think it would have surprised anybody if Pat had fallen to seventh if he was the Pistons pick there instead of what ended up being Killian Hayes. So there's a lot of things there, a lot of smoke, a lot of things that, you know, you catch out of the corner of your eye, and it makes you really think of the possibility of a trade like that happening. Like you said, it's still early in the game here, and this COVID stuff has thrown a lot into flux. So we'll see how the trade market develops.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I think unless, Casey, you have anything else to add in this conversation, that's a pretty good segue to another thing that Arturis talked about with Mullion Haugh this morning as we're taping, which was the injury timeline of Patrick Williams. That's another thing we should think about as we're discussing him and, you know, whether as a, you know, potential piece in a trade or a potential piece that's still, you know, a cornerstone of the Bulls' future and potentially, you know, if he is able to make it back this season, a piece for a playoff run. Arturis was very careful to say when asked, you know, about the possibility of Patrick Williams coming back this season, because the Bulls, you know, have reportedly been denied a disabled player exception, you know, application for him. He was very careful to say that the Bulls are not going to rush Patrick back. They don't have a timeline for his recovery or return to play right now. They're taking it week to week, but he did acknowledge it would be nice to have him back this season and appeared to leave the door open when the Bulls first announced Patrick's surgery, which was to repair some torn ligaments in his left wrist from that fall during that Knicks game in October where he collided with Mitchell Robinson in air. They put a 4 to 6 month recovery timeline on that, which would put him between February and April, which puts you back from just after the All-Star break to, you know, the beginning of the playoffs. That's kind of what that window is. So all of that's to say, it seems like it's well within the realm of possibility that Patrick Williams returns this season. We've talked a lot about him in a potential trade, but I think if he sticks around, that's still big news for the Bulls. Obviously, he was their starting power forward at the start of the season. He was a potential swing piece in this team's quest to kind of get back to contention. So, Casey, what did you make of AK kind of leaving that door hanging open a little bit as the team did when they first announced the surgery back in October?
I mean, and I do have two final thoughts on the trade situation or the trade kind of subject that we covered. But I'll answer your question on Patrick Williams first. You know, my mind went to when we wrote the initial news story. I mean, we left open the possibility that he could return. I mean, it's just do the math. I mean, it was pretty apparent that, you know, if the Bulls make a long playoff run, that his availability would certainly be in play. You know, there's obviously conditioning and rust factor to consider, but just in terms of availability, I think it's a very real possibility. That is, if he is on the roster. And that's why I would just tie into the last two things I want to say about the trade situation. You mentioned, sure, and you made a good point about the Jeremy Grant, you know, like the role acceptance or whatever. That's where you, I think the previous experience that both AK and Billy have had with him has weighed in cold. I mean, they know the guy. You can get that information via back channels or, you know, acquaintances, shared acquaintances. So, you know, they clearly know his agent, et cetera, et cetera. So, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff I think would be, I don't think that, I don't see that as a much of an issue at all if they do to choose to pursue him. They would have all that sussed out before they made their decision on what, you know, if they want to sacrifice the capital that they'd be sacrificing to acquire him. And then the last thing I'd say is, I mean, and you mentioned we're going to write about this, and we'll get into more detail rather than going deep into this right now, especially because I've not fully done the research. But, you know, you also have to factor in luxury tax considerations with any mm-hmm. trade the Bulls might make, because this historically is a franchise that has not paid the luxury tax. They paid it one time in franchise history. I do think, given the financial outlay that the Bulls have undergone to, you know, transform the team with the hiring of this whole new management team and the player development staff and a significant salary for Billy Donovan, I do think it's, you know, they'd reach rock bottom. And I think from an ownership level, the financial commitment has been very robust since these changes were made. So I'm not then equating this to the headline, they will pay the luxury tax. I don't know that to be true. It's certainly a question I'd like to ask, you know, ownership at some point. But what I would say is that that's certainly something to consider, because they're pretty close to it. You know, and Jerry Reinsdorf's famous quote from way back when was, I'll pay the luxury tax for a championship contender. And maybe the Bulls are already knocking on that status earlier than we would have thought. So we'll see how that plays out.
That's the difficult thing about this, about just kind of pegging down this Bulls team at all, right? Is they absolutely have the mental makeup, it seems, of a contender. They've got the record of a contender. They've got the standing in the conference of a contender. They've got the quality wins of a contender. Just everything looks great right now. But it's a group that, you know, as Arturo said on radio this morning, just kind of came together and coalesced 3 months ago. That's part of what makes it so remarkable that they are where they are right now. But, you know, I certainly am not smart enough to be able to say with 100% confidence the Bulls are a finals contender right now, or the Bulls are a finals contender if they make one more trade, or they're not a finals contender right now. Like, I still just don't feel 100% confident anyway. It's why I don't envy the job of the people that, you know, are paid to make these high leverage, high risk decisions. But it's what makes the situation so tricky. But you're right to bring up the tax consideration, because that's big, especially, you know, any of these trades, you're taking on salary for years to come. And oh, by the way, we've talked about this a couple times in this podcast. Zach LaVine is up for a pretty sizable extension this offseason that could get re-signing this offseason that could be get even more sizable if he finds himself on an All-NBA team this year, which he appears on track to be well in consideration for. One thing to tie a bow in the trade conversation, and 100% you're right to bring up the relationships, the pre-existing relationships, making that information gathering process easier to come to. Definitely do not mean to like say that Jeremy Grant is like a locker room problem or anything like with his personality. Nothing personal. Like, I don't know Jeremy Grant at all. This is just something from a strictly basketball usage perspective that I think about when I see how much his usage has changed in Detroit. You just wonder about the smoothness of going back and forth from where he was there to there to there. So
for sure, I'm glad you made that clarification, but I would think I didn't read that when you brought that up, and I would guess most listeners didn't either, but always good to clarify to make sure.
100%. All right, Casey, let's get to something that you wrote off of practice today. I thought it was pretty interesting because it's something that was a story at the beginning of the year, and as you bring up, has not been a story as of late, and shouldn't be one moving forward. Zach LaVine, who I believe the verbiage is tore a ligament in his left thumb very early in the season after the Bulls started 4-0. It was a big, big topic of conversation back then because Zach obviously chose to play through the injury, taped it up. There was kind of this cloud looming over for a couple weeks there, where it was, well, let's just hope that Zach doesn't get hit in that thumb or re-aggravated in any way. And I'll let you, you know, elaborate on this, but as he mentioned today, it did affect his shooting for a little bit of a spell there. So, you know, I'll just kick it to you. Obviously, Zach has been without that tape on his thumb for over a month now, and more than looks himself. The scoring numbers, the efficiency, everything is where it was last year, and especially of late has even been above that level, as much as DeMar is getting a lot of the MVP shine. Zach, as he says, is quote unquote not far behind him, and that's definitely true. So, Casey, what did you get from talking to Billy and Zach today about that thumb injury that was such a point of consternation not too long ago, but has faded into the background a little bit?
Well, I got a little bit of a backstory. It's kind of funny because you know how beat writing works. It's one of those things where that asking Zach that has actually been on I never wrote it down, but it's in like the back of my mind many, many times. Mm-hmm. And you go to practice. Well, they don't always have practice, but you go to like media opportunities and you run down what you think you're going to get to. And then invariably 8 to 10 things pop up during the day. And then in my old and cluttered mind, I lost the thread. So the reason I ramble on and tell that story is I want to give Jamal Collier credit for asking the initial question. And I was like, oh yeah, I've been meaning to ask Zach that. So I asked a bunch of follow-up questions, but you know, the reason why it's so interesting to me is because I was the one kind of hammering that theme for a while. There were a couple of games there where I was like, I remember one road game early in Philly where that was like my main post game column. I was like, this is not going away. This is going to be a problem area, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, kudos to Zach for navigating as well as he did and playing through it. I mean, that just kind of speaks to his commitment to winning, commitment to wanting to be out there for his teammates and playing through pain, because it was painful. And I loved how, you know, while he was going through it, he certainly downplayed it. He did acknowledge a couple times difficulty with ball handling, et cetera, but he downplayed it more often than not. And then today, when I asked him if he bought it, he goes, well, check the shooting splits. You know, it's like, and he knew exactly what they were. And Rob was nice enough to look them up for me because I had some other things going on. And I mean, it's not like they were bad shooting splits, because they weren't, but they were definitely down.
You want me to give him? I'll give him really quickly. So in the 14 games that Zach played with the tape on his thumb, which were between, like I said, that fifth game of the season, and he took it off before that road game against Houston, where they lost to 1-16 Houston at the time. In that 14 game span, he averaged 26.1 points, 3.4 assists, and 2.8 turnovers, shooting 48% from the field, 37.5% from three, and 85.7% from the free throw line. So, you know, for most players in the league, that's like the best stretch of your career. For Zach LaVine, that's playing with tape on his thumb as he plays through pain of a torn ligament in his off shooting hand. In the 15 games since he ditched that tape, and you know, presumably it was pretty close to full health. I think he said that he really didn't feel 100% with it until December, but had been playing without it for a few days before that. So in the 15 games since he took the tape off, Zach is at 26.8 points per game, so almost a point up there. 4.9 assists, 2.8 turnovers. So the assists are up, turnovers are level. Shooting 51.2% from the field, 45.4% from three, and 83% from the line. And that 3-point percentage, 45.4%, is on over 7 attempts a game, because that's, you know, who Zach LaVine is. He's a very high volume shooter and scorer, and a highly efficient shooter and scorer. So, like you said, splits are pretty good either way, but there is a noticeable difference there, especially in the 3-point shooting.
Yeah, and I'll say this, man. When you send me those stats, I mean, it's pretty remarkable the level he's shooting at again. I mean, what's his true? Have you looked up his true shooting percentage recently compared to last year? Because that's where he got so much.
If you can blab for 10 seconds,
like, that's why I was doing it without you asking me. See, I'm a veteran podcaster. I was starting to blab so you could look it up. No, but that's what I was going to say is that's where he got a lot of shine last year, was his true shooting percentage, which was ridiculous. And then he also had the high profile stat that was narrowly missed becoming like the only ones besides Curry and Bird to shoot 50-40.
It's 50-40-85. But he was like, what was he, like 6 free throws off of that? You did that last year.
So anyway,
true shooting percentage of 61.7% this year, compared to 63.4% last year. So,
but I mean, like, both are ridiculous.
Exactly. And for all the talk and we were saying it and it was true. And you know, his scoring average is down a point a game, and he's not carrying the load to the level that he was every night last season. But for all that talk, he's pretty much matched his production and is pretty damn close to matching the efficiency of last season this year. And the Bulls are, you know, a completely transformed team, a winning team. It's just the death of that narrative. You see it with Devin Booker. You saw it with Trae Young to an extent. Like, you go down the list of these guys, just the idea of, oh, this guy isn't a quote unquote winning player, or it's empty stats or whatever. Like, we said for years that that was something that didn't apply to Zach, and with a better team context, you know, that would be proven. And that's one of the bigger storylines of the season to me, or the bigger revelations of the season, is how false that narrative ended up being with him.
No doubt.
All right, Casey, let's stay on Zach and DeMar quick. Let's finish up with some all-star fan voting returns. First round came out today as we're recording. DeMar leading East guards in voting. I personal digression, still don't know why he's listed as a guard. He's been a starting three or four for the last three seasons, but that's just me. It actually probably helps DeMar that he is a guard, because the starting East front court is likely going to be Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Joel Embiid. That's as much as ever, you know, the guard pool is stacked too, but that's much more difficult competition than Trae Young, who's been phenomenal this year, James Harden, who's found his way, Zach, who's obviously been terrific. I still think for DeMar to get that starting spot, the guard route is a little bit easier, even if I don't understand it positionally. So DeMar's leading the way guard-wise. Zach is fourth behind DeMar, Trae Young, and James Harden. And Nikola Vucevic snuck on there, 10th in front court players. I know, you know, the story of his season has been that early season shooting slump. He's really found his way out of it. Six straight double-doubles, has been shooting it a lot better. But, you know, KC, it looks like the Bulls are on their way to their first all-star game with multiple all-stars since Jimmy and Powell back in 2015-16. They actually did that two seasons in a row. But it looks like they're well on their way to that.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, you should be pointing out these are the first returns, and this is fan voting, which comprises, mm-hmm. I want to say 50%.
50% of the starters. So it's 50% fan, 25% media, 25% player for the starters, then the coaches pick the reserves.
Right, and that's the point I was going to get to, is this is the first returns of fan voting, which is only one component of starters, and then, you know, the coaches' reserves are always the ones that they carry to me the most impact, because, you know, they kind of know what's up, whereas – you can get player voting, you know, guys voting for Ryan Arcidiacono and things like that. So, or wait, what was my favorite one year? I think, we're talking about Jeremy Grant. I'm forgetting about who was the Grant.
Jaren Grant.
Jaren Grant got a vote one year from one of his teammates. So
you got to vote for your teammate. I'd vote for you if there was a media all star game.
That was a speaking of media though. I am fortunate to be getting a ballot this year. So I should run that past DeMar and Zach and say I'm open and willing to accept all influences and bribes. Just kidding. That's a joke. It's a bad joke. I do not do that. I take that responsibility very seriously. One more time, I'm going to say that was a joke. It was a joke. Bad joke. So anyway, I'll have a ballot. But yeah, you know, Zach obviously got in with the coach's reserve pick last year. And, you know, I think DeMar will be a lock for the All-Star game if he doesn't even get in voted as a starter, because he's definitely going to be a coach's reserve. And, you know, Zach's putting him should be in that conversation prominently. Well, I personally think they're both kind of locks. So.
Yeah. Well, listen. DeMar right now is at almost 1.5 million fan votes. Harden's a shade under 900K in second place. Trae Young, 860. Zach, 780. If DeMar holds on to his stranglehold of the fan vote, we know he's getting the player vote because of how much respect he has from his peers in the NBA. I think it's a pretty safe bet to say he'd get the media vote, because just, you know, from a narrative perspective, how he's, you know, his arrival has coincided with this Bulls situation completely exploding, the game winners, the fourth quarter scoring. He seems a lock to me to start. The question is, you know, whether it's Harden, Trey, or Zach behind him. And then, like you said, if the coaches picked Zach last year, and we just ran through, the numbers are very similar this year, but it's on a team that is 15 games over 500 as opposed to a couple games under, like they were at this point last season. That's looking like a pretty safe bet. They've been the best scoring duo in the NBA this year. They've both been in the top 10 in scoring all season. At times they've both been in the top five. So it's that's pretty clear cut. That's pretty cut and dry for me. And it'll be fun for Bulls fans. It'll be great, obviously, for the organization, if and when that does happen. And then, you know, the Bulls can turn their gaze to where it really has been the whole time, which is, the playoffs. And, you know, for DeMar and Zach, there'll be, as we alluded to earlier in the show, perhaps all NBA consideration at the end of the season too, if they can keep it up the way that they have through the first half. KC, anything else from practice? Any stray thoughts kicking around in there that we may have missed that we got to get to the people before we get out of here?
Just know that Cleveland is beautiful in February, so I'll be there for the All-Star game.
All right. Exciting stuff. We thank you guys, especially our YouTube viewers. Casey and I don't do this often, so we appreciate you guys hanging out with us. And, of course, to all of our listeners via podcast, too. This has been the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Rob Schaefer. Thanks, Casey, again, for joining me, and we will see you guys next week.
We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk Podcast. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.